This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates, Larry Page, Elon Musk are only a few of many large business owners out there that we hear often on a daily basis. But flip the coin around, there's a longer list of big business owners out there, those of which have access to and are bathing in millions of dollars, all of whom we have not even heard about. This inexplicable fraction of people too are business owners, large business owners, businesses that are known as crimeware as a service. It's the newest fad, you'd say, of the dark web. My name is Jeff Sandhu and you're listening to Tech Talk. And of course, I'm no expert of the dark web, so I brought in someone who knows a thing or two about this.
I'm Chester Wisniewski, a principal research scientist at Sophos.
Chester, welcome to the show. Not many may have heard the term of crimeware as a service. The idea of being able to purchase crimeware service from your own home seems so foreign to many. With that in mind, let's start with the basics. Can you give me some context to the notion of crimeware as a service, or CAAS?
Well, sure. I mean, it's just the criminal equivalent of the services that you and I and many of your listeners use every day, right? Many of us don't run our own mail servers, and in fact, we don't even necessarily put our files on thumb drives or CDs or anything like this anymore because we have the cloud, right? We just outsource it to someone else and let them buy hard disks and let them make it available for us and let them, you know, craft clever websites that make it easy to use. And for us, of course, those things are things like Gmail and Facebook and Dropbox or, you know, these types of services. But the criminals have started adopting the very same business models, realizing that there was too much technical aptitude required for a lot of greedy people with maybe without morals. And so they decided, well, maybe we can make money offering that as a service to people who maybe aren't technically clever enough to run their own criminal operations, but we can let them get in on the business and take a commission.
The crimeware industry has evolved tremendously over the past 5 to 10 years. At its early stages, we would only find individual software engineers creating, at that time, new tools for their own crimeware schemes. Today, we find all these intricate packages and services of crimeware being sold and bought in the dark web. How has CAAS, or crimeware as a service, served as a game changer so far?
Yeah, it's really evolved a lot, as you say. In about 10 or 15 years of time, we've seen it move from, you know, individual criminals on Russian-speaking forums just negotiating with each other over, hey, I saw this thing you did that was pretty good, can I buy that from you? You know, all the way move on to now fully functioning black markets. At a recent event I was speaking at, I was showing some of the dark web where you can kind of just go shopping with a search engine very, you know, not very different from Google. And you just go in there and start like, oh, you know, I heard about this ransomware on television. Maybe I want to be a ransomware criminal. You type in ransomware to the search engine and, you know, 50 results come back of people willing to sell you software that lets you, you know, hold someone's computer for ransom. So it's literally lowered the bar where, you know, just about anyone can get into it now, which sadly means many more of us are being victimized because when it was, you know, more specialized attacks, the criminals kind of made a point of going after very high value targets. Now that there's, you know, literally probably tens of thousands of people engaging in this type of activity, they're going after any one of us they can make a victim because, hey, it's free money when you steal it, and the tools are available to anyone to go about it.
Even the really small guys who, you know, the mom and pop store, the small and medium sized business owners, they're getting attacked as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the increase in attacks against small and mid-sized businesses have just been off the charts because, on you know, those small businesses don't have the ability to defend themselves. So while they may not have nearly as much money as a large enterprise, I always think of it like, you know, if you think about the local store maybe that sells pizza or sandwiches or noodles, I mean, they may have 3 or 4 employees and they have to pay them every week. So at some point, there's a few thousand dollars or ringgit in the bank account, right? And if you can control the computer that does the payroll, then you could steal all that money whenever it's there. And, you know, most of these criminals are more than happy to take small amounts from undefended targets instead of going after a really well-defended target like a big bank or a telephone company or a government.
This dark web store, Chester, easy like Amazon?
Well, a little bit like that. I mean, it's, of course, the currency of choice in the underground is not any kind of real cash, although prices are often quoted in U.S. dollars to give people some relation to how much it costs. But, the currency of the dark web is largely Bitcoin. And, the Bitcoins, for many people, that's a bit of a mystery. Like, how do you buy them? How do you use them? And we do see a lot of criminals get arrested on the assumption that some of these things are more anonymous than they really are. One of the differences between, say, Bitcoins and real money is anytime a Bitcoin has been spent somewhere, you can see exactly sort of a serial number of the wallet that it went to and from and to and from. You can trace the money every single time it's been spent, unlike our real currency that we carry in our pockets. So many criminals actually maybe have an overconfidence in some of the cryptographic things that are used in these crimes and often manage to get snagged by the police as a result of it.
So what kind of services are available on the dark web to execute crimeware? Malware toolkits and stuff?
Yeah, just about anything. I mean, there are people selling services to send out your spam that may, have malicious content, or maybe phishing attacks against, major banks or PayPal, these types of companies. And then, in addition to the spammers, you've got people selling, Trojan horses that are designed to compromise bank details when you log into your online banking, either through your phone or through your desktop computer. We see people selling these ransomware kits. We see even people selling basic software tools that allow you to build your own malicious Word documents or build your own malicious PDF files that can then deliver some of that malware. And much of it, is offered even to be hosted by the criminals themselves. So you don't even have to know how to set up a server or anything. You can just contract them to provide you the infrastructure, no different than you would with Amazon or Google.
And how has CAAS impacted the security solutions and services?
Yeah, I think it's certainly impacted us in that more and more businesses are waking up to the problem, sadly, too late often. They have an incident where some money is stolen or, computers are compromised or held ransom, and then they realize that they're not too small to be targeted. And so there's been certainly an uptick in interest in defending against it. And I think a lot of media things like this hopefully get the message out to people, one, to be incredibly careful, because nobody's really too small unless you have nothing worth stealing. And that, if you have no money and no interesting information, then there's probably somebody out there that might want to steal it. And if you can, be particularly cautious, you can hopefully avoid being the next victim, because they do look for easy victims because they're pretty lazy, a lot of these crooks.
And in just some stats here, Chester, cybercrime apparently represents an underground economy of $114 billion. That's a lot of money, Chester. How do they operate? How much different is this from the regular day-to-day economy that we know of?
Yeah, the marketplace operates very much like any, capitalist market, right? I mean, there's supply and demand. It was amusing, well, sort of amusing. It's never amusing when crimes are occurring, but, when the Target attack had happened in the United States with the 40 million credit cards that were stolen a few years back, the price of a stolen credit card on the black market plummeted. there's a lot of people selling stolen credit cards, and at any given time, they're often going for 20 or 30 US dollars a piece. But after, all those stolen credit cards were suddenly in the marketplace, the price of a stolen credit card plummeted to a few dollars. So, these markets react just like real markets react. There's some key differences, of course. Occasionally there's major criminal busts by the police, and often internationally in multiple countries. And that obviously has an impact. Two of the major marketplaces, sort of you used the term Amazon earlier, and I don't want to really pick on their brand, but a marketplace of that kind of scale on the dark web, the FBI shut down one of them about a month ago, and the Dutch police shut down another one back in June. And, that obviously has a disruption in the market again, where prices fluctuate oddly and criminals aren't quite sure where to go and meet and hang out and chat about their malicious activities. And, we don't really see that in the real world, but largely it's a fully functioning market.
We're going for a short break with Chester Wasneski. He's the global spokesperson and the principal research scientist at Sophos, talking about crimeware as a service, and we'll be right back. Tech Talk, BFM 89.9.
Brewing Financial Minds, BFM 89.9.
And I'm back, Jeff Sandhu here, together with Chester Wesneski. He's the global spokesperson and principal research scientist at Sophos. Talking about crimeware as a service, yep, it's real, it's here. Chester, huge money is being made in the dark web. Let's talk about the people behind the curtains, the individuals behind the crimeware. How much do these individuals need to know, and what sort of knowledge do they need to possess to be successful in this crimeware industry? And how has this changed over time?
Yeah, it's largely turnkey, right? I mean, there's sort of two actors that you can think of. Maybe actor is not the right word, but you know, two different parties that are involved in these transactions, right? There's suppliers who write these tools or create these attacks and then, you know, make them available as a kit. And then there's, of course, the people purchasing them. And so, you know, to create these kits and to create something that's going to be profitable and successful, you know, still takes quite a lot of skill and talent. And it's believed by me and others that many of the people creating this are maybe doing it because in their country, it's only a crime to actually attack someone. To make a kit available to someone else to do the attack is not a crime. So I think many of them believe that may keep them out of jail. But it takes quite a lot of sophistication to build those things. Now, the people that are purchasing this stuff on the dark web, I mean, it literally is as easy as any other software tool that you or I might purchase to do anything else. If you've used any kind of cloud-based service, like I say, with something like Gmail or even, you know, maybe Adobe's Creative Suite or Microsoft Office 365, you're kind of purchasing the criminal equivalent of that. I mean, you just, if you're willing to pay enough money, they give you a login and a password and you go on your web browser and you can start controlling a botnet.
Is there any sort of monitoring going on into the dark web to know what's being done and what's transacted that could possibly be used to get like a heads up of what might be on the rise to protect ourselves?
We do monitor it, although it's incredibly difficult. The design of the dark web uses a technology called Tor, and this technology is designed around an anonymity and encryption, which fortunately is used by a lot of legitimate things as well, right? I mean, it's not only used by criminals. Often you'll have journalists who may be in danger if they communicate where they're at, and that's a safe way for them to communicate out, and there's a lot of other ways it's used. So its distributed nature makes it very hard to monitor, although we do watch very closely. There's a lot of, you know, you can kind of see trends no different than you might see in fashion or other things, where you start seeing popular people changing tactics and then other people that maybe aren't as smart or aren't as well known kind of following along with those tactics. And as those things shift and change, we try to get warnings and alerts out to businesses and individuals about, you know, how we see the threat changing. And sadly, every once in a while, we see a surprise like the leak of those NSA exploits that were in the news a few months ago. When we see an event like that, we know these criminals are going to capitalize on this new knowledge that they've gained, especially when it's sort of government-grade attacks, right? And we know that those things are going to show up in the dark markets and probably be used to attack us. And so we do try to raise the ring those alarm bells and let people know to be on the ready.
But we know it's harder and harder to catch these bad guys. What's the challenge here?
Yeah, it is incredibly difficult. I think the largest problem at the moment is just the laws for police to work with one another internationally, because very rarely is the victim in the same country as the perpetrator of the crime. And our laws on for police working together are very slow, and they're based on different types of, you know, physical crimes of the past. And that's really hard, because sometimes some governments, it can take up to 6 months to a year to get permission to ask a foreign government for their help in policing a given investigation. So fortunately, you know, there are a lot of work being done in the private sector, because it allows us to kind of bypass those things. So like if I discover something about some criminals that are conducting some sort of online attack, I can share that with both the source country and the destination country without any red tape, without any bureaucracy, and kind of, you know, speed up that process, right? Because I don't have any rules that I have to abide by. I'm allowed to contact the police anywhere and share information that may help them investigate a crime. So we're trying to work around those things, because it's very difficult when the laws are also very different in every country. I was in Malaysia, and you know, the rules in Malaysia are different than they are in Singapore as to what's a crime. And of course, they're both different to what is a crime in maybe Canada or Great Britain or France. And so that makes it complicated as well, trying to figure out, is this even a crime where the incident has occurred.
And what can we do here, Chester? We seem to be giving away more options to these cyber criminals with the rise of IoT, smartphones and all that. We can't seem to protect one door securely 100% at the moment, and security is just going to get a lot more prominent, I guess.
Well, I think for individuals, there's kind of two or three things that are really important to try to do to better protect your online identity, right? And one is make sure that you're applying those updates. I mean, you all get those pop-ups on both our phones and our computers saying, hey, there's an update available. Usually it's, you know, when we're busy doing something important. Put them on as soon as possible. You may not be able to do it if you're in a meeting or working on a document, but if you can do it before the end of the day, you're doing yourself a favor. Always say yes to those when you can and make sure you do them promptly. Today was, you know, some updates while we're speaking from Microsoft, and so many people will have seen those recently and make sure they do them right away. A second thing, of course, is make sure that you have security software on your computer, you know, to protect it, you know, antivirus, firewall, these types of thing. They're available largely for free for individuals now, right? Businesses need to pay maintenance contracts and things to be able to get support from commercial companies on it. But individuals can get that for free. If you go out there and look, my company and many other companies offer free solutions that are very good quality that will help protect you from a lot of these threats. And then the third thing is, the third thing is really keep those passwords unique on all your important logins. And I think all your logins are important. It's okay to write them down if you have to write them down, or use a plugin or an app on your phone or for your web browser to help you manage them. But make sure you're not sharing that password on multiple accounts, because these criminals are stealing passwords by the tens of thousands or millions sometimes. And then when they steal it from one website, they try it on the top 1,000 most popular websites to see if you used your password, and those accounts can be very valuable to them for you know, resetting your banking password or compromising your Facebook account to send dangerous links to all your friends and family and that type of thing. So if you can keep those things sorted, you'll largely avoid most of the problems out there.
And then you have this whole remote working or BYOD or consumer applications that are being used to conduct businesses that many may not be a secure thing to do. Is this a challenge for businesses as well?
Yeah, it's difficult, because you want your employees to have freedom to connect that phone to the Wi-Fi, right? Because you know that a happy employee is probably a more productive employee, and it's helpful to be able to communicate you know, on our personal devices while we're at work. There's a lot of solutions out there for businesses to look at that can help control access to that information when, you know, that mobile phone maybe has both work email and personal email. You know, there's ways that you can actually sort of build containers into your phone. And as a user, you don't really think about it any differently, right? You just have two different email things, my work email, my home email, but the business itself can protect that work one and put it in a little bit of an encrypted vault on your phone. So there are solutions out there. And I think globally, it's getting more and more common that people want to be able to have access to their work from everywhere. And I think businesses want to enable that, because, of course, if I'm willing to work in the evening, or I'm willing to work from the home or the coffee shop or wherever I may go, you know, they're getting more work from me, right? So we want to enable people. And I think most the high tech companies now that are sort of leading the way on the future for this are looking at it and going, well, let's just protect the information and then let people put it wherever they want. We'll let the information be in a web portal in the cloud. We'll let you have it on your phone or your iPad. We'll let you have it on your laptop. As long as we protect that data with some sort of you know, passwords and protection that if it's stolen, it can't be easily accessed, then we'll give you the freedom to do what you need.
Just things like driverless vehicles, connected home devices, connected traffic light systems for, you know, of all those sci-fi things and we've seen and heard. Is there a risk of IoT ransomware whereby I'm stuck in my autonomous vehicle until I pay a ransom, as it could be another avenue in the future? Is this something to really worry about?
I think malicious software that attacks all of these smart devices, as you say, whether it's infrastructure like the traffic lights or all the way on down to things in our home, is certainly a very big concern. And it's something I've put a lot of research into and been working with some governmental bodies in the United States on recommendations for manufacturers to build safer devices. Whether we worry about ransomware in particular, I'm not so sure. I mean, I heard a lot of information about that recently, and I was like, well, if you tried to hold my microwave hostage, I'm not sure how would you display the ransom message. You know, maybe ransomware is not the thing criminals are going to do with it, but we certainly could foresee both, you know, small scale and large scale disruptions from attacking these devices, because while I might not be interested in making your home too cold and, you know, messing with the thermostat in your home and turning your air conditioning down to 15 degrees or something, I may be interested as a infrastructure attack against a government, for example, to put 5,000 air conditioners on 15 degrees. And, you know, maybe that would trip a circuit breaker in the grid and cause, you know, disruption, right? So there's certainly things, especially when you talk about smart cars, that do kind of keep me up at night. But I also know most of both the governments that are pushing for smart cities and manufacturers, certainly of dangerous things like automobiles and traffic control systems, are putting a lot of effort into testing, doing as much research as possible on how to secure these devices before we have billions of them. Hopefully we'll discover any problems while we're still experimenting.
How do you see crimeware as a service evolving in the future?
Well, I think we're going to continue to see it grow because the barrier to entry is very low. I mean, oftentimes people can, you know, spend as few as $100 and start playing around and doing things. And sadly, that opens it up to a lot of people. The good news for us is that most of the quantity of the stuff is easily defended against, right? But by putting those updates on, by running antivirus, that kind of stuff, you actually block almost all of this type of an attack if you're prepared, because it is rather unsophisticated, right? The really clever attacks, the bad guys aren't going to sell for cheap on the black markets. They're going to keep them for themselves for high profile intellectual property theft, or maybe even sell them to governments. And so most of the things that the average person, the average business is facing is very defendable, but we're going to continue to probably see lots and lots more of it. So we should be prepared for that.
So we got a part to do here to make sure that we're always updated with the latest firmware. So let's start somewhere. And even if it's just a free product, that at least helps the security providers. Everyone has a role to play, Chester.
Yeah, and actually, it's sort of a neighborhood thing. By taking care of your own computers, you're helping those around you, because often the criminals will use, once they have control of your machine and they can get malware or viruses onto it, they then use you to attack everyone else around you. So it's kind of a good Samaritan type thing. It's good for the community that we all have clean computers, because it's less horsepower for the bad guys to do attacks on others.
Chester, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
I've been speaking to Chester Wesneski. He's the global spokesperson and principal research scientist at Sophos, talking about crimeware as a service. And if you missed any parts of this interview, download the BFM app on the App Store and Google Play and search for Crimeware as a Service. This has been Tech Talk on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.